I want to wish everyone a happy Father's Day. Hope you get to do something good today. This morning, I thought I'd share with you a little fatherly advice from a bachelor. You know, often we're not too fond of hearing advice from people who haven't gone through the same experiences as us, but that's what we're going to do this morning. And if you're following along, we're going to be in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, we're going to look at verses 7 through 12. Now, a woman and her 8-year-old son were sitting in their seats on an airliner, and as they got ready to land, as they neared their destination, the mother said to the little boy, "Now remember, run to dad first, then the dog." You know, society has diminished the role of fathers today and what they play in our lives. Of their children and stuff, but God has a whole different perspective on that. You know, you might remember when men were men, and you could tell it by looking. When women were the ones who wore the earrings and the makeup and stuff, you might remember when men knew who they were and had confidence in themselves and in their God. They knew where God was leading them, and they trusted Him to get them there. You know, maybe the problem is that today in our society is they've tried to convince women that they can be as masculine as men, and men that they can be as feminine as women. So we have put them together in one big mixing bowl, so to speak, and until we're no longer sure whose role or what role we function in life. Now, Father's Day presents us with that opportunity to once again look at men and masculinity. And we're not talking about the Rambo types that walk with a swagger, that curse like a sailor, and whose answer to every problem is to kill a bunch of people and wreck mayhem all over. Not talking about the Archie Bunker type, who sits in his chair like a king on a throne and orders everyone around and thinks the whole world revolves around just him. I'm talking about a man who knows he's a man and is proud of it, but at the same time has a soft and tender heart that is sensitive to others around him and the will of God. I'm referring to God's man, the kind of man who really makes a great father. Where do we find guidance for that? Well, the Bible is always the best source for any guidance on life. You know, people can go to all kind of books around and try to get advice, but it seems like the Bible always has that right thing to tell us to help us through our way. So, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 is not always thought of in the context of a Father's Day type sermon or anything like that. But I think once we look at it, we'll see that it is a perfect scripture we can go to learn about Father's Day. So if you read along with me, in 1 Thessalonians 2, starting in verse 7, "But we were gentle among you, like a mother caring for her little children. We loved you so much that we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you have become so dear to us. Surely you remember, brothers, our toil and hardship. We worked night and day in order not to be a burden to anyone while we preached the gospel of God to you." Verse 10, "You are witnesses, and so is God, of how holy, righteous, and blameless we were among you who believed. For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God who calls you into his kingdom and glory." So, it's kind of an idea of a fatherhood here. We know that, of course, Paul was a bachelor. Jim was not married, had no physical children to his name, but he treated the church and he treated those close to him as if they were his children. Now, the first thing we see that Paul is expressing to them is that he's able to express genuine love towards his people. You know, the first trait of a father should be that ability to express love. In verse 8, he said, "We love you so much." Now that's real deep affection. They just didn't love him a little bit. He loved them a lot. He loved them enough to sacrifice his life in love to them in order to bring them along the way and to keep the wolves that would come at the door of the church, to keep them away. I think it's important for fathers to have that trait, to be loving and expressing. You know, that's probably why the Bible tells husbands to love their wives. Because sometimes we have to learn that, and we have to learn to apply it. It almost never tells wives to love their husbands, because that usually comes natural for mothers. They're loving and nurturing by nature. But, you know, that's just the way it is. But the Bible tells us many times to express that love. We have to learn that. A lot of times we learn it in our child relationship. That precious little baby in your arms, with the whole responsibility of having to raise them, to set them upon their way, to teach them about God, hopefully, and to teach them about the world. You probably remember when you brought your first child home. Your wife seemed to know exactly what to do, and you know, it just seemed so natural for her. And she knew that, you know, you had to support its neck. It wasn't that strong. You had to watch the soft spot on the head, because, you know, they had that at that time. And, you know, you really had to be careful around it. And they just seemed to know all of that. They knew when the baby was hungry, when it needed a diaper and all that. But we had to learn that. We had to learn how to hold them and how to cradle them. And we had to learn some of the different cries, and when it seemed that it was more of a hungry cry than I need a changing cry and all that. And we learned those things, but it just seemed so natural. But men need to learn to love as they should today. And in some places you see more caring and love, but you see more neglect when it comes to learning about God, even in those same time they're expressing a whole lot of caring for their children. But soon we get to a place where even if we're not so good with them, we kind of enjoy them and enjoy being around them. And we eventually learn what we need to learn in those cases. But then what happens? They grow up. And just about the time, you know, it gets real good, you know, it happens. We're no longer, you know, my little guy or my little girl or anything like that, doing things together. They're kind of expressing some independence. And a couple of years ago, in a cartoon strip, for better or worse, you know, it showed Dad coming into the room with a bowl of popcorn, and he sits next to his daughter on the couch, and they're watching television, and he's munching popcorn, and so all of a sudden a little thought bubble appeared above his head as he looked at his daughter, and he's thinking, I remember when she was so young, I held her in my arms and loved her, and it was wonderful. Now look at her. She's all grown up and such a beautiful girl, too. I wonder what she would think if I held her like I used to and told her again that I loved her. He finally concluded that she would be uncomfortable, and, you know, she did that, and he decided not to do it. Well, in the cartoon, the next frame shows a little thought bubble over her head. I wonder why Dad never hugged me anymore. Never let it become unusual or uncomfortable to show affection to our children. To show affection to everyone we love in this life, no matter how old they become. There's nothing wrong and there's nothing weak for a man to express that love. But there's true bond and true friendship in expressing that love, and those bonds go on forever. You know, our best example of fatherhood is, of course, our Father in Heaven. And, of course, the prodigal son story is the one story that we go to kind of express how God exactly feels about us and how we should be with our children. Now, we know the story. The son goes off to a far country, and he squanders all his money on what, you know, wine, women, and song, as they say. And when he runs out of money and runs out of friends, he finds himself flopping an unclean animal, a pig, and actually so hungry that he eats the slop that these pigs get. Now, I've seen the stuff people slop the pig, and there's a reason why they call it slopping the pig, because it is quite the mess that we give them. They seem to enjoy it, but as humans, and for him, especially a Jewish boy, that had to be humiliating. To eat with the unclean animals, to eat the food that they have, to compete with them for the scraps that they have. And as he sits there, you know, he came to himself, and he starts thinking, how many of my own father's hired servants, in other words, those who worked for his father, had food to eat? He's starving to death out here in a far country where no one cares for him. I'm sure they loved him when he was throwing the money around. They sure enjoyed when he spent money with him. But right now, they could care less about him. And that's the way the world is. You want to dance to the world's tune? The world will dance with you. But when you run out of the resources to dance with the world, it's going to turn its back on you. But he realizes something very important. He realizes that he could go back to his father. The relationship may never be the same, but he knew that the door was open to him. How did he know that in his life? It had to be because of the relationship he had with his father, that he knew his father loved him. And though he got this itch to go and do what the rest of the world did, he knew that his father loved him and that maybe he could come back. Things might be different, but he could go back to him. So he says, I'll go back to my father and I'll tell my father that I've sinned against him and I've sinned against heaven. And he would go back to him and that I no longer was worthy to be your son, but I'll work as one of your servants. And I bet you if he walked to him every step of the way, that speech ran through his head, what he would tell his father. Every step he'd run it through his head. Change the words a little bit so it maybe sounded better to him. But here is his father. And this shows you the love that his father had for him, the love that God has for us, the love that fathers should express to their children. His father looked every day for him on the horizon. And when he seen that blip out there, and when he looked up, and he probably noticed, he walks like my son. He kind of, favors my son. And when he realizes that that's his son, he runs out to him. Now imagine he's not very young as an old man. But with all his energy, with all his effort, just as God spent all his energy and effort to try to save you and me, he runs to his son. And though his son tries to get out the words, his father throws a ring on his finger. Now, that's kind of lost on us today. But that ring on the finger signified that he was restored to sonship. He wasn't going to be a servant. He got the best clothes and he threw it around him. He accepted him back. He accepted that change. You know, the beautiful part is that our Father in heaven always leaves the door open for us to come home again. And as dads, we need to always leave that opening with our children, that no matter what happens to them, they are your children. Whatever problems they have, you'll get through it with them and with God's help. And hopefully someday, they'll have that same faith in God that you have and they'll walk with Him again. They can always come home. You know the old saying, you can never go back home? Well, it should be, as it is with God, that someone can always go back home. That there's someone there to throw their arms around you and care and love for you. Secondly, a father is a transparent wife. Paul writes in verse 8, we loved you so much that we delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. Now, there's a connection between gospel and lives here. Paul not only preached the gospel, he lived the gospel. They lived it by the words they said. There was an example there. If you're going to be a Christian dad, your kids ought to know that's the way you live. That as a Christian, it's going to affect every decision you make in your life as you walk down the road of life. The values in your home will reflect that. They won't be like those in a non-Christian's home. You know, the non-Christian home, they value things like pleasure, power, prestige, and possessions and stuff like that. But in a Christian home, we learn the things we can't see, things we can't buy and things we can't possess and hold on to, are really the most precious. We have completely different values between our home and that home. And our children should be able to see that. What about stress? How do you deal with stress? It should be differently from the world. It should be in prayer and comforting God. What about finances? How you budget your money? The gospel will affect that also. That we're not spending money foolishly. That, you know, we're saving for a rainy day. We're giving to the Lord's work. We're keeping the gospel going out there. Thirdly, a good Christian father should show an unselfish diligence. Paul said, you remember, brothers, our toil and hardship. We work day and night in order not to be a burden to anyone while we preach the gospel of God among you. Now, I think we have a responsibility as parents and fathers also to teach a good work ethic to our children. And oftentimes, if kids don't see a father doing their work or being a good worker himself, then they learn that same thing from them. You know, we teach it in two ways. We teach it by example, by doing. And secondly, our children learn by doing. We let them do some things and they can earn by it and grow from that and learn that things need to be done around the house and work and stuff. You know, I remember hearing a story of a little boy. He wasn't very artistic, who was trying to draw a horse on a piece of paper. His father, who was very artistic, watched as he did. The little boy was clumsy and, you know, he tried his best, but it didn't really look like a horse too much. So his father tried to help him. He'd give him some advice, but, you know, the little boy couldn't translate the advice into good hand movement, and it wasn't really working out. So the father grabs a piece of paper, draws this beautiful horse on it, and hands it back, saying, here, that's the way you do it. The son turned and looked at his dad and said, but Dad, I want to draw my own horse. Every child has to draw his or her own horse. They have to be able to make mistakes, and we have to have the patience to keep coaching them through those mistakes, to let them make the mistakes, because that's the only way they're going to experience things, and allow those mistakes to happen, knowing that they're learning. You know, we learn. We shouldn't be making those same mistakes. But let them have some mistakes, because that's part of learning. A genuine spirituality is what a Christian father should also have. Paul said, you are witnesses, and so is God, of how holy, righteous, and blameless we were among you. You know, you preach the gospel, they live the gospel. And they got to see the witness of them doing that each and every day. God's commission, they have to be spiritual leaders. And you have to be a spiritual leader at your home, helping them find their way in life, helping them find God in their life. We have to show that we're genuine, that we believe in our Christianity. Don't let them see us as hypocrites when we do one thing on Sunday and do something different during the week. Some people can look pretty pious walking in with their Bible on a Sunday, but then the rest of the week, you can never tell they ever went to church. So it's absolutely essential that you and I are genuine in the lives that we lead in Christ, that we really believe in these things and that they're not just platitudes or good sayings or something because we feel some sort of obligation to pass it on to them, but that we live the life that a Christian should have. And lastly this morning, a man or a father, a Christian man, should have a positive influence. Finally, there's that trait that Paul writes about. For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his King and glory. Not making fun of children when they make mistakes, not criticizing them, you know, harshly for their mistakes, but encouraging and comforting and urging them to do better in their lives. That's what a father should do. He should urge his children to live by God's rules, comfort them when things are bad, keep pointing that way up to God, and help them find that way. Dan Benson, in his book, The Total Man, says that for every positive word that most dads say to their children, they say 10 negative ones. They're really good at words like don't and can't and stop that and no, but they're not very good at the positive words. Benson suggests that we could change the whole personality of our relationship with our children if we just learn to be positive and influence things in a positive way. Encourage them. Help them. Love them. Show them. Those are the ways of a Christian father. And everything he does in life and everything he shows to them, even when we're not talking, we're showing them. And we need to live that life. You know, Father's Day was coming near, and a father brought his little three-year-old son to the card store and so that he could pick out a card for Dad on Father's Day, so he could take part and feel a part of Father's Day. When he looked back, his son was picking up one card after another, and he was opening them up quickly, and he put it back, opened up another one and put it back, and he opened up another one and put it back, and finally, you know, he said, "What are you doing?" he asked. "Haven't you found a nice card for Daddy yet?" "No," he replied. "I'm looking for the one with the money in it." You know, that's not just an ATM machine, though we feel that way sometimes, that we're just a cash machine. Dad is a learning machine, just as Mom is a learning machine. And whether he knows it or not, whether we know it or not, our children are learning from us, as other children are learning from their parents. We need to make the most of the opportunity God has given to us. He's given us a great responsibility with our children. And that responsibility seems to go all our lives, that our children can come back and ask of our advice and our wisdom and of our experience. Oh, we can tell them about our mistakes in life. We can help them not to make those mistakes in life. You know, and we can take the mistakes of our lives and turn them into positives too. If we haven't been living this way, then it's time to start living that way so that our children can see that people can change for the better, that people can be better. I don't know what your needs are at the church this morning, but even as we talk about a Christian father changing his life, we can change our lives for the better and accept Christ and obey Christ and do the things that Christ wants us to do in our lives. But whatever your needs may be this morning, won't you come as we stand and sing the song of invitation?